The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Alternative Podcast. I'm Adit Chakraborty. In this episode, we're looking at social enterprises. Simply put, businesses that work towards a good cause, trying to solve social problems even while making a profit. Social enterprises have been around for over a decade now, but they really took off after the coalition government rolled out its austerity programme. As more and more cuts were made in local government, social enterprises were meant to fill in the gaps. In 2013, Plymouth became a social enterprise city, the first in the UK, and it now has around 150 social enterprises, employing about 7,000 people and bringing in an annual income of over 500 million quid. Go to Plymouth and you can drop in at a cafe that's also a hub for dementia care. You can pop in at an abandoned pub that's now been bought up by a community building company to be turned into affordable flats. And then there's a solar farm, right next door to a bomb dump. All of these, including the city's universities and the major local housing association, are social enterprises. But right at the hub of the city's social enterprise economy is RIO, the Real Ideas Organisation, who imported the concept of social enterprise from Toronto a decade ago. They took over a derelict and beautiful Grade 1 listed building and renovated it. So today it hosts a social enterprise bakery, a decent cafe and countless startups. I'm joined now by their boss, Lindsay Hall. Lindsay, you're based in Devonport in Plymouth. Tell me what that's like.
Well, I think Devonport's the best bit of Plymouth, but then I would say that because I'm biased. So what it is the area on the west of the city. It is the former dockyard, so it dates from the 1800s when Devonport was a bigger town than Plymouth. It's the place where people like the Beagle, you know, the Voyage of the Beagle set off. James Cook went from here. Robert Scott went off to Antarctica from here. So it's, you know, it's a place that is quite steeped in history. But in sort of recent years, really post-war, it went through some very hard times. So it was badly bombed in the Second World War. And then really after that, the Navy decided, the MOD decided that they were going to get involved. And at the time, that the way to protect Britain's secrets from the Cold War was to build a very large wall around the dockyard. So we had our own version of the Berlin Wall. And the effect of that was to completely split and decimate the community of Devonport. So it's, you know, it's definitely had its ups and downs.
You're describing society that's post-industrial and post-imperial. What's that lead to in terms of social and economic deprivation around you?
So what it's led to is an area where lots of people who live here struggle. You know, Devonport is still in the 10% bottom indices of multiple deprivation. So it's a hard place for a lot of people. However, because of the changes in the new housing, that's also meant that new people have moved in, and that's brought with it actually a much greater diversity, which is brilliant. So I think now somebody said to me that in some of our primary schools around here, there are 23 different languages spoken. That's quite recent. That's within the last 10 years. That's really positive. That's really exciting. It's quite a sort of mixed environment, I would say. It's also somewhere which is increasingly becoming a bit more creative. So, yeah, it's quite affordable. So people are beginning to move in who, you know, perhaps are younger or who are doing different types of things. So it's changing, but changing quite slowly, I would say.
And within the city, you head probably the best known social enterprise. Tell us what you do and what makes it a social enterprise.
Okay, so our social enterprise is the Real Ideas Organisation, and we sort of do what the name says. So we're really interested in the process of how to work with people, with communities, with organisations, to come up with good ideas that solve problems, change things, improve things, and then really put them into practice. So what that's meant in practical terms is that, for instance, we've taken on the Devonport Guildhall, which is a Grade 1 listed building, dates from 1824, which was in the middle of the regeneration area of Devonport, and was a building which, for good reason, couldn't be knocked down, but was not in a really great state. So our approach has been to say, OK, what can we do in that space and with that building, which makes it economically viable. So it's not revenue funded. It is an enterprise. It means we have to earn the money in order to keep the building going. But how do we do that in a way which is good for the local economy? So creates jobs, brings people here to be based here because they're working out of the building, creates all sorts of events and, you know, things like that. So the way we've done that in terms of Devonport Guildhall is to create workspace, so companies are based here, to create an events business, so lots of people come and use our space for anything from weddings to corporate events to markets to plays to funerals,
cheerleading practice, I remember when you took me around.
Absolutely, yeah, all sorts of things. And then we've also developed an artisan bakery. So we've installed ovens and we make bread. And then we sell that bread to other places in the city. And we also run a cafe and, yeah, all sorts of stuff like that.
Okay, so that's a really interesting project. And you've rescued a dead building and brought it back to life. But what makes that a social enterprise as opposed to just a collection of different businesses?
Well, it's because it's a social enterprise is because we are a social enterprise. So we are what's called a community interest company. So that means that we are a company. So we are interested in making profit and we do pay taxes and we do pay business rates and all those sorts of things. But the way we're structured means that we can't pay, we can only pay a very small dividend to our shareholders. So essentially what it means is that rather than a conventional business which can choose to pay, you know, good dividends to its shareholders who might be somewhere else entirely, the vast majority of our profits come back into doing more of the work that we do. And not just that we choose for that to be so, that has to be so because of the legal structure of our business. So what we say is we want to make a profit, but what we do with our profit is different from many conventional businesses.
Just give me a flavour of what social enterprises there are now in Plymouth.
Oh, I mean, anything you could possibly think of, really. So you can have your teeth fixed by a social enterprise dentist. You can go and eat in all sorts of social enterprise eateries. You can go to university in a social enterprise university. You can live well, so obviously all sorts of health type stuff. You can rent office space from social enterprises. A huge list.
And you're based in a city which 5 years ago became pretty much the first social enterprise city in the UK. So what does that mean for the businesses around you?
I think what it means for Plymouth is that Plymouth has, if you like, gone on a journey, and I think this is now true across the public, private and third sector, has gone on a journey to say, as a city, you know, Plymouth, it's a city which has struggled, and in our growth and in our looking to the future and wanting to improve the economy of the city, what we're really interested in is how do we do that in a way which makes sure that you know, everybody in the city really benefits. And the sort of illustration of that, if you like, is it's actually something that I watched on television a few years ago, and you may remember this, but a few years ago when you switched on the telly, you could watch The Apprentice, you could watch Alan Sugar with all these people going through the process of being The Apprentice, and whilst it might have been good telly, frankly a bit shocking to see that, you know, they were generally rewarding people being pretty badly behaved in order to make a lot of money. And then you just get to the end of that program and, you know, what would then come on was Secret Millionaire, and, you know, that was all about people who'd been incredibly successful making a lot of money. And, you know, there they were wandering around communities which often looked a bit like Devonport, and, and giving away money. And, yeah, very generous of them as individuals. But, you know, what an indictment of our society that, you know, essentially you make money in a not very nice way and then you hand it out again afterwards. And I suppose that I found quite shocking, really, that that's sort of where we'd got to. And what I think Plymouth being a social enterprise city is all about is the idea that we don't want that. We don't want to be a place where a few people make a ton of money and then, you know, either out of the goodness of their heart or not, You know, they give it away. And that actually what we should be doing as a city is saying, no, let's have a different economic model which says we grow in a way that benefits everybody. And, you know, that means we want to really reduce inequality. And so it isn't just the people in the top 20% of income who benefit as the city grows, but everybody does. And maybe that means we make slightly different decisions about the way that we spend money, or the way that we, you know, create economies, which means that we buy from each other so the money stays in the city, or, you know, all of that sort of, I guess, more socially enterprising way of doing things.
It sounds commonsensical, but if I were to take what you said to its ultimate conclusion, it would lead you into a very different economic model from the one we're used to in Britain, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's why I really hope we get there. I mean, you know, because it doesn't make any sense to me what we do at the moment. I mean, you know, the idea that, you know, as we grow, and this is true in Plymouth, it's true in the UK, you know, GDP, you know, gross domestic product, the sort of measure of economic growth, has been steadily climbing over the last few years. But yet in Plymouth, and I'm sure it's true the rest of the country, is actually for the bottom 20% of people, their income has not gone up at all. You know, their wealth has not increased. And so what that means is, all very well for the few percent at the top to get richer and richer, but at the end of the day, there's only so many things any one family or any one group of people can buy or consume or can experience. And if we really want to make the economy work for everyone, then don't we need to spread that wealth much more equitably, so that we're not dealing with people, you know, struggling, having really tough times, but we're also, and this is a straight economic argument, we're also increasing the ability of everybody to be able to, you know, buy from each other, to be able to do things with each other, to be able to work together. Just seems to me to be completely common sense.
All right, keep going and give me some bread and butter. What concretely do you think could change within Plymouth by 2025, for instance?
So one of the things that Plymouth has done is it has Plymouth Growth Board has adopted the idea of inclusive growth as the way that we will measure the success of the city's growth strategy. So, yeah, we want growth, we want better jobs, we want more jobs, we want more highly skilled jobs. But we don't want to do that at the expense of all the people of Plymouth. So I don't know exactly how that's going to work, but maybe that means that as a city we make different decisions. So maybe we say that rather than just going with, I don't know, the development sites that are the most profitable for particular individual companies, as a city we say, no, we want to bring those jobs to another part of the city that might be struggling. Or maybe we say we're actually going to look at our transport strategy and we're going to really major on the fact that what we need to do is to make transport easy and affordable for everybody, which means that people aren't stuck on one side of the city, not able to go and get the jobs that are better or better paid in another part of the city because they can't get there.
All right, hold on. Slow down for a second. Because where you are, no, it's fascinating. Where you are is in the west of the city, right? In the most deprived part is the old west, which used to be incredibly prosperous but has now been effectively kind of ruined for up until quite recently. And you were talking about where jobs could go. Now, there's a whizzy new science park on the northeastern side of the city, right? Which is where all the middle-class homes are. There's a reason why that science park is put there, isn't there? Are you seriously suggesting that at some point the council decides it's going to grow a pair and start moving its major economic sites to areas of economic deprivation?
Yeah, and it is, in a small way, already beginning to happen. So the new marine enterprise zone is in Devonport. We are just in the process of developing the Devonport Market Hall, so yet another listed building in Devonport that, you know, was redundant, nobody knew what to do about it. Well, that's being turned into a high-tech, digital, immersive technology centre. So, you know, what we're saying is that actually those types of jobs need to come to Devonport as well. Now, that's not saying that we don't want the science park to exist. Fine, let's have the science park, but let's not have everything up there. Let's actually say what we need to do is bring those types of opportunities, you know, to somewhere like Devonport. And, you know, the City Council have been incredibly supportive of that. The Growth Board is, you know, it's in Plymouth strategies, it's in the Plymouth plan. So, you know, it's not the entire answer, but it is certainly a move in the right direction.
All right, you work across the southwest and you, you've lived all over the UK. How unusual is what Plymouth is doing within the British context?
I think what is interesting about Plymouth right now is that there is a sort of moment in time where there is a level of consensus about the sort of basics of what's right and fair that is quite unusual. I think we are, in some ways, it's good timing that Plymouth is a city of about a quarter of a million people, so it's a sort of manageable size. I think trying to do what we're doing, you know, in a big metropolitan city is much harder. You know, you're trying to corral a whole load of people, whereas Plymouth is somewhere where people tend to be based for a while. You know, it's a city which people become very attached to because of the geography. It means that, you know, you come and you stay for a while. So I think in that sense it's unusual. Is it unusual in the sense that the types of issues that we're seeing are not being raised elsewhere? No, I don't think that. I think actually these concerns are being expressed in lots of places. Lots of people are concerned about inequality. Lots of people are concerned that growth should be more inclusive. Social enterprise is growing, you know, quite rapidly across the country. You know, more young people now start social enterprises than they start conventional SMEs. So Plymouth is unusual in that the level at which there is agreement about, you know, the big things we should do, I think. But I think the general direction of travel is one that is happening in all sorts of places.
Could you see whole tranches of Britain? Could you see the rest of the southwest declaring itself a social enterprise zone?
Yeah, I mean, it's coming. You know, Cornwall does declare itself a social enterprise zone. Bristol is a social enterprise city. I think the really interesting stuff is how do we move to, I don't know, big infrastructure projects actually being social enterprises. It's interesting that in Wales, for example, Welsh Water is a social enterprise. And, you know, they are doing that because what they're saying is, you know, why do we have a water company which, you know, the profits are, you know, disappearing off to parent companies or other parts of Europe or whatever? Why aren't we keeping, you know, the profits from that and, you know, reinvesting them back in Wales?
Listen to all of that. It's genuinely exciting, but it does make me wonder, how on earth would the CBI, the IOD and the Tory party take what you're saying?
Well, what's interesting about it, well, it's a schizophrenia, isn't there, is that at one level, you know, social enterprise is actually quite a cross-party thing.
They all say they like it, but some mean it more than others, right?
Yeah, well, quite. I don't disagree with you. And I think what you get to, isn't it, is at what point do the people who have a lot, you know, what's the motivation to say, actually, we don't really need as much as this, because in the end, you know, we will live in a better society, in a better country, if it's a bit more equal. You don't hear very many people saying that inequality is wrong.
Yeah, but you don't hear many people say, here, take a few million out of my bank accounts and spread it around.
You don't. And I think you're absolutely right. And that's what's sort of interesting, isn't it? Is, and I suppose that's possibly why somewhere like Plymouth, it is easier to have those conversations, because, you know, there aren't very many people in Plymouth who are, you know, literally in the take a few million pounds out of my bank account. But there are quite a lot of people in Plymouth who are building businesses who are very attached to the place, who sort of go, actually, you know what, you know, we could have slightly less profit. You know, interesting conversations with big construction companies who are saying, yeah, you know what, if it meant that we were putting more back into the local economy, yeah, we would put, you know, 1 or 2% of our profits from a big job back into something that was actually going to benefit what was going on in the local community. So I think the bit that is tough is the getting it to become normal. And as you get it to become normal, then things become possible that weren't before. But I have to say, I've been genuinely surprised that certainly here, you know, we get a lot of support from you know, both sides, who get that, you know, social enterprise is good for the city. I think, you know, there are sometimes political debates, but I really, really, really hope that social enterprise doesn't end up becoming some sort of political football, because I think that would be a real shame.
Lindsay, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. This episode was produced by Simon Barnard and Lily Ames, and it was presented by me, Aditya Chakraborty. Get in touch at alternatives@theguardian.com.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.